I'm Jeremy Barron, and this is Colt Gennaro Chat, the only weekly English language podcast dedicated to Europa League winners, Atletico Madrid, and the official podcast of Into the Calderon, SB Nation's home for all things Atletico. My guest on this edition of Colt Gennaro Chat, making his standard weekly appearance, is Into the Calderon staff writer Rob Walker. Rob Walker is the guest on this edition of Colt Gennaro Chat. The World Cup is over, but we're smiling because it happened. A great World Cup, of course, a fitting finale for such a marvelous tournament. France, the winners, they beat Croatia 4-2 on Sunday. Antoine Griezmann, man of the match. Terrific performance to cap a terrific tournament. Is he in the Ballon d'Or conversation? We're going to talk about that. Also, should Lucas Hernandez open the season as Atletico's starting left back after his own personal World Cup exploits, most of which were extremely good? That's another question we're going to answer. In addition to a little more World Cup banter, we're going to run through the opening days of Atleti's preseason preparations, some surprising tactical wrinkles being instituted by Simeone at this early stage. Will he stick with them? Find out what we think in the upcoming minutes. But first, make sure to leave a rating and a review for Colt Gennaro Chat on Apple Podcasts. You can also subscribe, become a Colt Gennaro Chat amigo at patreon.com/ColtGenneroChat, where you can hear all the bonus podcasts, the weekly rumor roundups that I do with Rob. The latest one has just been posted. Make sure to listen to it. Again, that address, patreon.com/ColtGenneroChat. From as little as $3 a month, you can become a Colt Gennaro Chat amigo. We'll be back with Rob Walker after this.
That's how it goes.
Yeah, I think I told you we had a power outage at work today.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like it's a lot of fun.
A 3-hour power outage. I had to stay through all of it.
Oh, God, why?
I need to secure the bag.
I suppose so. Get some hours in.
You know, I'm going on vacation this week. I got to secure the bag.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough.
And, yeah, I just watched the end of Freddy's stint in the Home Run Derby, I guess you could say.
Yes, indeed. Indeed. He's no home run hitter. But,
yeah, exactly. I don't think of him as a power hitter. He's just not. Really good hitter.
Yeah. He's trying to hit too many opposite field home runs. But you know, whatever. It's all good.
Hey,
I did appreciate him being booed by the Nationals fans. That was quite joyous.
Yeah, ATL represent.
Oh yes, got to. Well, we have 4 All Stars this year, which is more than it's been the last few years. So
combined,
know. Yeah, exactly. Because the Braves have been absolutely shit ass terrible for the last few years. So yeah, no, this year is an enjoyable one.
And Bryce just hit one a mile. This is going to end quickly.
Yes, he will do that.
Yeah,
old Mr. Hooper. He's quite good.
Yeah, I will try not to be distracted by the flying baseballs on my television while we do the podcast.
Yes, we'll do our best.
But the World Cup is over.
And
I'm sad.
It was a lot of fun.
I'm very sad, because it was, compared to 2014, this was a marvelous World Cup. The 2014 World Cup was garbage, lest we forget.
Yeah, I didn't mind 2014. It was... Also, lest we forget, a lot better than 2010. 2010 was anus, in my opinion. Mm. But 2018 was absolutely better than the last two, without doubt.
I thought 2010 was more fun than 2014.
I hated 2010.
And between those two World Cups was about the time I started really heavily following football.
Fair enough.
I remember 2014 just being so awful. Like, the tactics were awful. The style of play was awful. Just one goalless game in this year's World Cup, and the team that won the whole thing was responsible for it.
Yes, and which was absolutely, by far and away, the worst game in the whole World Cup. That game against Denmark was absolutely terrible.
And I woke up early just for that game. And I'm like,
not the one to watch, that one.
Nah. But France, they've won it. They've only gone and won the whole thing. They beat Croatia 4-2 in the final on Sunday. Really fun game. Really fun way to end the World Cup. What did you make of the match?
I mean, it's a lot of fun. Normally, World Cup finals are quite kind of tight and close matches that the last two have gone to extra time, which, and they've been fairly bad matches, but this one was a lot of fun in comparison, even though I sort of expected Croatia to lose. France were just quite a lot better than them, really, in the end.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And France just, they had too much talent. This was their time. And just Croatia, yeah. I think they hit their breaking point. No one had really challenged them defensively. I mean, Russia had, and Russia nearly beat them.
Yeah, I mean, they went to three penalty shootouts. They had an equivalent of a whole extra match, more than France did. Three extra 30-minute periods. That is, that'll weigh on you.
I mean, that defense was just not good enough.
No.
No matter what Lovren says, that defense wasn't good enough.
He's still Dejan Lovren at the end of the day.
Best center back in the world, Rob.
Yes.
Don't
yes,
you forget it.
Yes, and Subasic is also one of the most terrible keepers that somehow is in the finals of World Cup finals and gets to latter stages of Champions League.
He was somehow really good. At this World
and
Cup.
I also think he was hurt, actually.
Yeah, but half that team was hurt by the time the final rolled around. France just...
This is true. They played a bazillion minutes.
Like, Vrsaljko played through a knee injury he got against Russia, for one.
Yeah, that's a little concerning. Just a little concerning.
Yeah, Atletico apparently did not want him to play against England.
But, of course, he will play, because...
But he did, and he was great.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they did have Tin Yedvai, who's not really a right back, but clearly, as we've learned from this tournament from France, if you have a center back that's really good, you can play him at fullback.
See
Benjamin Pavard and Lucas Hernandez.
Yes, just make them both fullbacks, and believe you me, we're going to talk about Lucas.
Yes, oh yes. Mm.
But I think the pace of the final was excellent. The way just France against the run of play just blew the game open was very impressive. Pogba's goal was extremely lucky, but
yes,
you know, goal's a goal.
And quite poor goalkeeping.
Oh my goodness, yeah. And then Mbappe's goal, just, you don't stop that.
Mbappe is just ridiculous. And as crazy as it is, I would say that his market value is quite a lot higher than Neymar's. Even prior to this World Cup, I think he may be the most expensive player in the world just in terms of value at this point, just because of his age and how good he is at such a ridiculously young age.
Yeah, I think Neymar didn't do his rep any favors at the World Cup this year, not even getting to a semifinal.
If anything, he kind of made himself more of a joke. I know this may be kind of coming from the more American perspective, but from the kind of unlearned American soccer fan, people just know Neymar as a diver at this point, which is kind of sad because he is a very good footballer.
But, oh, yeah.
You know, his antics kind of earned him a worse rep than his good production.
Yeah, indeed. And I had Renato Gonzalez on last week, and he was talking about, even though he wasn't very good, he still led all players to that point in the tournament. He led all players in shots and chances. Like, he was still really good despite not being really good, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he just wasn't able to really put Brazil on his back in the way that people sort of expected him to.
Yeah. I felt bad for Felipe Luis. That's all I had to say about Brazil.
Yep, he got that one game, which is actually more than I thought he would get.
Yeah, he got two games, technically.
Yeah, oh yeah, that's right.
Yeah, because Marcelo
was kind of hurt.
Yeah, he got two games. But France could not have run away with this game if it wasn't for the heroics of one Antoine Griezmann in the first half.
Robert. Yes, that's one way to put it, yeah.
A penalty and an assist of sorts.
Yeah, he assisted the own goal through a fairly consensus dive, I'd say.
I didn't think it was that blatant. You know, players dive all the time. It's part of the game.
Yeah, no, I'm not contesting. I think it was absolutely the smart thing to do.
Oh, yeah. And Griezmann's really good at it.
He is. And I think he clearly realized that he needed to put the team first this tournament, and he was right to do that, clearly.
Yeah, he said it himself after the Euros, where he scored pretty much all of France's goals, and France, he disappeared in the final, and France lost to Portugal. This time around, it was much different. He played much more the way he plays for Atletico.
Yeah.
Just at the heart of everything.
Which is kind of amazing. I mean, I guess that's sort of, in a way, gives some sort of credence to the reason why he stayed at Atletico is clearly this suits him quite a lot, just the hard work sort of role. Whether or not he gets the glory is fine, but he scored the final through a penalty, but other than that, he was sort of more willing to pass more than take the glory for himself.
And it was a perfect penalty, though, wasn't it?
Which is quite an improvement, because just 2 years ago, he was sort of known for blowing clutch penalties.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we don't have to rehash that.
No, we don't, but hopefully that chapter in his life is a little bit over.
Yeah, all three of the penalties he took in Russia were perfect. All three of them.
You'd imagine he'd be somewhat motivated to work on that.
Yeah. And to step up in a final with the scoreline of 1-1 in the first half, toward the end of the first half, to step up the way he did and just roll it clean past Subasic, that takes balls to do that, honestly.
It really doesn't get much more pressure-filled than taking a penalty in a World Cup final when the score is tied. I mean, it really doesn't get any more pressure than that. So.
And, of course, people complain that he did the take the L celebration, like, on the biggest stage in football, which, like, bro, whatever. I think it's great.
I mean, he's done it all year. I mean, I don't know why people are surprised. The reason people are surprised is because they don't watch Atletico play, but... yes, he will do that.
I read it was a rude celebration, a disgusting celebration. Like, he's been doing it since April.
It's the World Cup final, come on.
And he's going to do it in the World Cup final if he scores. Like, I think it's great. It's like, those are the same people who complain about bat flips in baseball.
Yeah, oh yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it ruins the purity of the game, the tradition of the game.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know? It's fun. I mean, you can argue it's showing up your opponent, whatever, but... At least in soccer, they don't have the equivalent of, throwing a pitch at someone else's head if right. you're a red ass like Madison Bumgarner or something like that. I have no problem with that.
I think only
listeners. It's a bit of fun.
I think only four listeners will get that joke, Rob.
Yeah, exactly. Well, look it up. Look up red ass in baseball and you'll figure out what that is.
Yeah, Griezmann's goals in this tournament, other than the penalties, were the howler against Uruguay that Muslera had and then bobbled. Which could have gone as an own goal for Muslera.
Yeah, and to be fair to France, they worked through the harder side of the bracket without a doubt. I mean, Croatia made it through a fairly weak side, even though they went to penalties three times, right. or extra time three times, rather. But, France earned it, I think. They're very worthy champions, in my opinion.
Croatia trailed in all four of their knockout games. France trailed for 9 minutes in the knockout stage. Knockout stage, that's it. 9 minutes.
And against much more difficult teams. I mean, I think Uruguay were an excellent team. I think a lot of the teams they played were really quite good.
Yeah.
But they did well to come out of it.
Yeah, Argentina probably should not have been in the knockouts, and that was some of the best football France played in the tournament. Uruguay, I think, was their possibly most focused 90 minutes. I mean, France didn't really play a complete 90-minute game in this tournament, and they still won it.
Right.
It's kind of wild. Right. And there have been complaints about that. Oh, we're not seeing best of France. They've been limited. They've been this. They've been that. They won the whole thing.
They did. And, I mean, I think they played against what you could argue is the best player in the world when they played Argentina. They played one of the best coach teams in the tournament when they played Uruguay, and then they played one of the most loaded in terms of talent when they played Belgium. So... They definitely earned it. I don't see how people could say that they didn't earn it. If Croatia had won it, I think there's maybe an argument that they got a little bit lucky. I mean, they had two penalty shootouts and they played England. So, but still, it was two fun finalists. I think Croatia were very dogged and certainly deserve praise for getting to the final in the first place. That's a hell of an achievement for them.
Oh, for sure. They had a great run. I mean, they had things break their way and on their side of the bracket, yes, but... They deserve to be in the final. Just didn't have enough to win it. France had too much talent, and France won all these games in a different way too.
That's right.
Like they just whipped Argentina to death on the counterattack. They had a really controlled, kind of methodical performance against Uruguay. They played very Atletico-like against Belgium.
Yes.
And they kind of blended two or three of those styles to beat Croatia.
Absolutely, and I mean I think it's sort of a cliche, but I think in these World Cups, you see teams that grow into tournaments, and I think France absolutely did that.
Yeah, they did.
And they put it all together in the final.
Yeah, by the time the final rolled around, this was a team that had a rhythm. They didn't have one identifiable style of play, but that's not a bad thing. People talk about that a lot, like it's a bad thing to switch styles a lot, but mm-hmm. It makes you a better team, I think.
And makes you hard to play against, hard to plan for the opposition coach and players.
Are we giving Didier Deschamps credit right now? I mean, I guess.
Well, I mean, this is France, after all, which absolutely means that in the next World Cup, they're going to go out in the groups, because that's just how this works.
Right.
They're France. They're going to blow up. Everyone's going to be mad at each other. This is how they do.
Back in World War II, they were quitters.
Yeah, lest we bring that up again. Let's go for the 2000... what was that? 2010, they... Or was it... What was it when they totally blew up? Might have been 2010. Might have been 2002 as well.
2002, they got knocked out in the groups.
That's right. They end up hating each other. That will happen.
But yeah, it stands to reason this France team is going to be around a long time. And Griezmann stands to be at the forefront of this team for a while. So he's only 27. And I think we kind of forget that Griezmann's still pretty young. And he was at the heart of just everything they did, especially in the final. He assisted or scored in each of the knockout stage fixtures. And he, like I said, he played a lot more like he played for Atletico. It was behind, I wrote in my column this morning, behind Costa for club and Olivier Giroud. Shout out to Olivier Giroud. No shots on target. Out.
World Cup winner Olivier Giroud, would you believe it?
Dreams do
Can't
come
wait
true.
For him to leave Chelsea.
Dreams,
really looking forward to that.
Dreams do come true.
God, would you believe it? Didn't score at all.
No shots on target.
Winner. But I think, you know, a lot of the stats about him not taking any shots is like he gave up a lot for that team just like Griezmann did.
Right, and he opened up space. He took away bodies to open up space, and Griezmann became free to dictate play as necessary.
Yes, absolutely.
Neither Atletico nor France have like that controller like Modric or Busquets in midfield. Pogba's kind of the closest analog that France have, but Pogba's so much more than that. He does so many other things than just control play.
Yeah, and he's probably their most, I guess you could call him a luxury player, because Conte's very functional, Griezmann's very functional, so is Olivier Giroud. Maybe Pogba and Mbappe, I mean, they're probably two of the most talented players on that team, naturally. And, man, they were excellent in this tournament, both of them.
So, Antoine ends the tournament with 4 goals, 3 assists, got the bronze ball, finishes the, I think, joint second-highest scorer, right, with 4 goals?
Yep, something like that.
Behind Harry Kane?
Shouldn't count set pieces in terms of goal. Well, but, you know, that's just me.
Well, if we don't count set pieces for Griezmann, he would have only scored 1 goal.
This is true. But, you know, two separate awards. The Matthew Letizia Award for penalty takers.
My question for you, Rob, is this. Is Antoine Griezmann a Ballon d'Or candidate now?
No.
No? Why not?
No, I don't think so. I don't think he's... I mean, I think it'll probably go to Cristiano Ronaldo, even though he really didn't do much in the World Cup. I know people are saying, oh, Luka Modric, oh, he might be a candidate. Not really seeing how that could happen myself. We'll see. I don't really see how a player other than Messi and Ronaldo could win it, unless FIFA have some kind of agenda to break up that duopoly. But,
which, you know, there could be at this point. You know, Ronaldo's left Spain.
True. And it's true.
Messi had a very good season, but Barcelona, all things considered, didn't, despite a double. Champions League.
They won the league. They disappointed, which, you know, sort of says it all about them.
Yeah, I mean, they lost one game in the league and were one of the best teams the league has seen in some time. But even then, there were times where they didn't impress. They won another Copa del Rey. That's fine. They do that every year. The Champions League exit really hurts Messi. Real Madrid weren't that impressive other than Champions League. Griezmann has the World Cup now. He got the Europa League a couple months back. He tore up La Liga the last few months of the season. I think he's a candidate.
I think that first half of the season will hurt him.
Quite possibly, but his 2018 so far has just been electric.
This is true. This is true. I think he'll finish a valiant third, perhaps.
I mean, it depends who the candidates are going to be when they're announced, but I think he's definitely going to be up there. And if he starts this next season well, maybe perhaps winning the Super Cup next month.
Yeah.
For one.
True. If he starts off the season hot as well, he could find himself right there in the mix.
He's also, you got to consider, he's also probably La Liga's second most marketable asset now.
Absolutely.
Behind Messi.
Absolutely. So that's World Cup huge. Winner now.
Yeah.
I don't see how. I mean, really, it's Messi, him, maybe Luis Suarez, maybe Luka Modric, maybe. Other than that, Gareth Bale on there, but really not too many super marketable guys. When you think about it, I mean, Ronaldo and Messi were there for so long, it sort of seemed like that was never going to be broken up.
But now it has. He's been introduced as a Juventus player. It is, it's finally happened.
We were quite doubtful last time we did this pod.
We did. We were doubtful, rather.
And I think rightfully so, given the kind of bullshittery he's been up to in the last few years with Madrid. So.
Yeah.
It's kind of surreal, a little bit.
Some more from the World Cup final. Lucas was excellent, again. Set up Mbappe's goal, Francis fourth.
Played every game, right?
Yeah, started every game. He was
amazing.
He was uncapped, hadn't declared whether he was going to play for France or for Spain just 5 months ago. In February, we didn't know where he was going to play.
And plays every game in the World Cup finals.
And in July, he's France's starting left back, and he wins the World Cup while playing very, very, very good. For a lot of that.
In a position that is almost certainly not his. I mean, I know he did very well there, but I still don't see him as a left back long term, which just makes it even more incredible.
Yeah, his per 90 statistics, I looked them up today as I was preparing for the pod. They looked very similar to what he did with Atletico this season. The tackles were down just a little bit, but passing numbers were pretty similar. Interception numbers, I think, were pretty similar as well. Blocks were about the same. He played pretty similarly to how he played for Atletico, but he just played up higher up the pitch a little bit more.
Yeah, and he did well, and he did that. Obviously, he had the few good key passes. Was that against Uruguay? Or against Argentina.
Argentina. He set up two goals against Argentina.
Yeah, absolutely. That was crucial, which is the reason why he's not a left back, is because he's not so good at that part of his game. But clearly, he shows that he's not an idiot, as we all knew, and he can set up a play very well. But still, very impressive from Lucas that he's played every single game of the World Cup finals at a position that is not his natural position.
Yeah, I think he developed his game during this World Cup. I think he did.
Almost certainly.
He still cleaned up really well defensively, sacrificed a little bit in terms of those numbers to move a little higher up the pitch and play a little bit forward. He contributed to some really key moments in France's attack.
Yeah, and they needed him too. I mean, as well did Benjamin Pavard as the right back, who's also a natural center back, which is just crazy. I mean, it's very Didier Deschamps. Oh, I don't care what your position is. You're playing right back and left back.
Right.
But, it's impressive. And it's great for him to win the World Cup at age 22. I mean, after breaking through at Atletico this season, I mean, it's been a very good year for our Lucas.
Yeah, that's with him for life. Meanwhile, I don't know what Teo Hernandez is up to.
No, he's sitting at home.
Probably getting some more
tattoos. Something like that, wearing weird short sweatpants or something like that.
Getting some more tattoos, posing for the gram.
He will do that. He will do that.
Yeah, so Teo's sitting at home doing whatever, while his older brother is a World Cup champion and a stalwart for it.
At his position.
Yeah.
Yes, we forget.
Yeah, just a wasted year for Teo.
Would have had an opportunity, my friend.
Should Lucas start the season as Atletico's left back? Starting left back?
No. I don't think so. I think he should start the season as Atletico's starting center back myself. But I think there's a reasonable argument to be made that he could do a good job there.
You know what? I would have been in agreement with you. I have been in agreement with you for the past few months, but I'm going to go in a different direction.
Go for it.
He impressed me so much at the World Cup that not only do I not think Atletico are going to buy another fullback now, if that makes sense. I don't think Atletico are going to buy another fullback because he was so impressive at the World Cup. Not only that, but I think he put in a very strong case to be the starting left back next year. I mean, you can't just tell this guy who started every game at the World Cup for the winners that he's going back to the bench. I don't think he can do that.
And oh, I don't either.
There's concern. Honestly, there are concerns about Felipe. I mean, he looked pretty good at the World Cup, but he's going to turn 33. He's coming off a broken leg. It's kind of like what happened to Thiago in 2015-16, and that's how Saul got into the team.
I mean, I feel you. I just think that this team needs a fullback, whether it's someone that can play both right back and left back or a right back, whatever. I think this team needs a fullback, regardless of where Lucas ends up playing long term. But I think it's going to be a straight race for that center back position, because I think Lucas has the claim to stake, as well does Diego Godin, who was excellent in the World Cup. So was Jose Jimenez. I think Stefan Savage should be dumped on the scrap heap myself. But, you know, I think you're right. I think Felipe, there are definitely concerns, given the injury they sustained and the age that he is now.
You know, a possible solution could be going to three at the back.
Yes.
And a friend of the pod, David Cartledge, had a little thread on that exact development the other day, Rob.
Yes, I did see this.
His thread started with a few bits on the first days of preseason training at Atleti. Simeone looking to switch things up in terms of formation. The first new system he's gone with is a 5-3-2/3-5-2. An insight into fullback plans, with Simeone aiming to use them more as wingbacks and higher up the pitch. And I'm just like, I'm going to print out that tweet and frame it.
Like, yes. That would be lovely.
Yes, Cholo, yes. Slay.
And it would actually, I think that would be beneficial to Shime Versalco, because that sort of would benefit him as well, because as we also saw in this World Cup, he's excellent going forward, which we knew already. And it kind of fell off a little bit in the second half of the season.
It would allow you to get both Lucas and Felipe into the starting team every week, because Lucas can play alongside Godín and Jimenez at the back. Felipe won't have to focus so much on defensive duties, which, coming off a broken leg at age 33, might be a concern.
Yes. And Godín wouldn't have to run as much if you put him in the middle of a three. He can just sort of sweep up, and that would be absolutely fine.
Yeah, play the slower, older Godín in front of the best goalkeeper on the continent, and you know, and alongside two really pacey kind of wipeout center backs in Jose Ma and Lucas.
Yes, who have both. Lucas has played left back and Jose Ma has played right back in the past, so they can absolutely cover there for when the wing backs are pushing up.
And Felipe and Versalco are still good enough defensively to where they can help out, and it becomes a 5-3-2 pretty easily.
And you'd think under Simeone that would be a common occurrence.
Correct.
So.
Now, something else that David said, we'll get back to that in a second. He talked about Angel Correa a little bit.
Mm.
So far in preseason, he's been used as a striker in a front two, perhaps as a Griezmann alternative or a swap if Grizzy plays in midfield, as we've seen in the World Cup.
And I think that's something you and I've talked about quite a lot. Angel Correa is definitely not a winger. We sort of learned this last season, and I think that would be probably the best spot for him as Griezmann's understudy, or playing in Copa del Rey matches or whatever it is. That's a perfectly reasonable backup.
I think this provides some more insight into why Atletico are going after someone like Kalinic, for example. I think what they may be trying to do is get like a straight alternates to Costa and Griezmann. Because Correa and Griezmann are pretty similar players. Obviously, Correa doesn't have Griezmann's polish, while Kalinic is kind of that big target man who's good in the air, can, you know, and lash home across with his, you know, and thump in a header. They're trying to get alternates for both players, and not, you know, try to mix and match strikers like Cholo's had to do throughout the past couple seasons.
Right, and Correa and Kalinic would be the Kmart version of Costa and Griezmann. I mean, that's just sort of the reality of it. And there's nothing wrong with that. I think that's perfectly reasonable if you're sort of developing solid backups for every position.
And I think it makes sense that would be what they're trying to do.
Mm.
It's trying to get just straight up alternates for them. So Correa going back to his more natural second striker role, that's exciting. My question is what they're going to do if they play a midfield three.
Yes. And it seems from sort of preseason indications and stuff people have said, as well as some of the videos the Atletico official accounts put out, that Rodri has very quickly impressed Cholo as we expected that he would.
To no one's surprise. It should not be to anyone's surprise. Did you see the video this morning?
Yes, the beep test.
Yeah.
That's what it's called in America. But
they're suicides. He was doing suicides.
Yeah.
For like 3 minutes straight.
That's our big, strong boy.
Yeah.
He couldn't fit any better into this team as Gabby's replacement, to be honest.
No, and Cholo is super impressed with him. David also wrote about that. Initial signs extremely positive. And even El Profe is impressed with him so far. That's hard to do.
This shouldn't be a surprise. He's so young. He's so gifted already in terms of his passing. And he's basically tailor-made for this team in terms of growing up with the club through the academy. So there may not be a better signing in Europe this summer. I really think that nothing could be better than Rodri signing for Atletico. I'm so excited to watch him play in this team.
I've been saying. I think what Cholo might just do is have Rodri in the middle or playing a little bit deeper as the single pivot and just Koke and Saul ahead of him.
Yeah,
which I thought he might do more in a 4-3-3, but I suppose it could work in a 3 or 5-man midfield.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't see any reason why that wouldn't work. I think you could quite easily have Tomas as Rodri's understudy, or have those two just fight it out for the deeper lying midfield position. And I think if you have Sal and Koke with a defensive midfielder behind them, that'll open them up to be a little bit more offensive productive than we saw last season.
Yeah, I think so. It's fascinating, and I really hope Cholo sticks with this, because let's face it, Atletico need to find another way to beat teams. They need to find another system, another style, another philosophy. In addition to Cholismo, they got to adapt. They got to find something else. And I think a 3-5-2 or a 5-3-2, whatever you want to call it, I think that is a system that, honestly, Atletico are made for that system now. With three center backs who have to play week in, week out, those three guys have got to be on the pitch every week. One of them is a World Cup winner. The other two are Uruguay's starting partnership. And you have a midfield quartet, which is going to be super, super competitive, and someone's going to have to miss out every week. It's going to be tough, and Tomas might be that guy most weeks.
And that's okay. That's okay. I would rather have an extremely competent backup like Tomas Partey rather than just be like, oh, God, someone picked up a little bit of a knock. We're going to have to start some chump in midfield. Like, I'm perfectly fine with Tomas being a backup. You don't really get much better than that. It's kind of rough that we lost Gabby in terms of him being a quite solid midfield backup, but it gives Tomas a better chance of getting into this team regularly.
Or as the backup right back, again.
Yeah, well, that would be interesting, seeing Tomas playing at wing back. That would be fascinating. Yeah,
don't sleep on that, especially if they get a good offer for Vasalco. They might just do that again.
Well, then we'll have, basically no wingbacks / fullbacks at all, which would be a problem.
Just a little bit.
Yeah, just a little bit. Have Vitolo playing right wingback, that'd be fascinating.
Yeah, what's this going to mean for Lamar and Vitolo and Gelson? Gelson comes in, which it looks like it's still on pace to happen. What's it mean for those guys? Are they going to be wingbacks in this system?
You'd assume not. You'd assume that there would perhaps be more than one formation that would be played at Atletico for the first time since Cholo's taken over, essentially, because it's always been 4-4-2, 4-4-1-1, whatever you want to call it. And it's it'll be a little bit refreshing to have a couple different styles of play depending on the opponent, depending on the competition.
It'd be nice to have selection headaches.
Exactly. Exactly, and I think that's totally fine, but I also don't think you spend upwards of 60 million euro on a player like Thomas Lamar just to have him playing left wing back.
Right, yeah. No.
So, you know.
I mean, Cholo has played Saul at left back before, so I wouldn't put it past him.
Yeah, this is true. This is true, but you hope that wouldn't be how they started the season.
Yeah, I mean, you'd hope not.
But you never know. You never know. And I guess the one negative of France winning the World Cup is there are Croatia being in the final, there are four Atletico players that went all the way in the World Cup that are going to come back super late for preseason. So that's somewhat worrisome.
I mean, Griezmann said yesterday he wants to play in the Super Cup. We'll see what happens, which kind of encouraging, but in a very Griezmann kind of way, kind of not encouraging.
Yes, exactly.
So my money now is that he will make it back in time for the Super Cup.
I'm trying to find out when that is.
August 15th.
What is... Oh, God.
So, yeah, 30 days from now.
Get your holidays over with quick, Antoine.
I don't know. I think he will be there. I have a gut feeling he'll be there.
It seems like a thing that would happen.
I mean, he talked about it post-match yesterday, so it's on his mind.
Clearly. And clearly, after signing or committing his future to Atletico, he wants to sort of endear himself a little bit further, and winning another trophy would certainly go a long way in that regard.
Yeah, and as I mentioned earlier, it might boost a certain golden ball candidacy.
This is true. This is very true. And against a Real Madrid side that are in quite a lot of flux. New manager, no Cristiano Ronaldo. A lot more is up in the air for them than is with Atletico.
Yeah, it's kind of been a disastrous window for Real Madrid, hasn't it?
Yeah, don't believe they've signed anyone other than Rodrigo of Santos in Brazil. And he's not going to come until he turns 18. So, I guess we're just sort of waiting on them to make their Gareth Bale-esque splash.
Perhaps in the form of Eden Hazard. You know, that's just speculation right now, but
yeah,
based on Hazard's provocative comments after the third place game.
Yeah, Eden Hazard clearly is one of their targets. I mean, obviously they'd like to have Neymar and or Mbappe, but I don't think PSG would have them do that.
Is it just me, or like, should they be prioritizing the signing of like a number 9?
I would tend to agree with that.
Because they don't have one.
Time to move on from Karim Benzema.
They don't have one. Like, with Cristiano leaving, who's going to score all their goals?
I mean, unless they think they're going to play Gareth Bale up front, but he's going to play, what, like 15 games a season? Because he will be injured.
I mean, we know Isco's going to be the centerpiece of that team, like he was for Lopetegui Spain.
True. Very true.
But you still need a number 9. Oh, you'll get a you'll get a kick out of this. They were linked with Rodrigo the other day.
Yeah, exactly. I'd rather them be linked with Harry Kane, to be honest.
I'm going to get a kick out of that.
It'll be interesting. I mean, clearly, Florentino Perez is not going to be outdone in this window just by selling Cristiano Ronaldo. If we've learned anything, he will make a big splash.
They're not going to be silent.
No, there is no doubt about that.
We'll see what they do.
But either way, it will be a quite influx Real Madrid team that Atletico play at the Super Cup, which may play to Atletico's advantage, because even though there's been some shifts in this team, it's still mostly the same in terms of backbone and identity.
Yeah, and Madrid won't have had much time, especially if they're incorporating new signings under Lopetegui.
Which we assume they will be.
Yeah, you just have to assume that, but, you know, there's a month to go, and that doesn't mean we're taking the next month off, though. We have preseason coming up.
Yeah.
Atletico and Arsenal again.
In about
10 days in Singapore.
In the very prestigious International Champions Cup.
Extraordinarily prestigious, Rob. Don't do
the world's greatest competition.
So here's how the schedule breaks down. International Champions Cup on Thursday the 26th, Atletico and Arsenal in Singapore. That is a 4:30 a.m. kickoff in Arizona.
Yep, 7:30 here. A little less bad.
I think I'm going to pass on that one.
I will be watching.
And then 4 days later, Atletico and PSG. Could be fun.
Yeah. That should be interesting.
That could be pretty fun. And then on August 8th, there's a friendly with Cagliari in Italy.
They're a team.
Can't confirm. Atletico then play Inter at the Wanda Metropolitano on August 11th before flying off to Estonia for the Super Cup on the 15th.
The Cholo Derby against Inter. So.
Indeed. Could be an emotional day for him.
Yeah, almost certainly. The team that his son said he was going to go to by now, he still has not gone there.
And we are thankful.
So. Yes, indeed we are.
So, yeah, preseason's going to be busy. We're going to be covering it. But as for the rest of this week, we are done for the week, possibly for next week as well, as I am going on vacation.
Huzzah.
But we will be back here in about 2 weeks for the next edition of the pod. Don't try to miss us too much.
Yes, please don't.
In the meantime, we will have a little bit of content going up on our Patreon page, patreon.com/cultgenerochat, including a bonus pod, which we are recording tonight. So before we get into that, I want to thank my guest, Rob Walker. Rob, thank you as ever.
A pleasure.
Follow him on Twitter at rwalk03. Follow me, your host, Jeremy Barron, on Twitter at jbbarron. Follow Into the Calderon at Into the Calderon. Like ITC on Facebook at facebook.com/IntoTheCalderon. Subscribe and listen to all new and archived episodes of this very program, Cult General Chat, on your favorite podcasting platform. That includes Apple Podcasts. If you're on Apple Podcasts, make sure to leave a rating and review. And again, check out the Patreon page, patreon.com/cultgenerochat. I will see you all, or you'll hear me, after my vacation. Adios.